Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Hey guys, what up? It's Solly. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the No Laying Up podcast. We will get to the podcast shortly that I recorded last night with No Laying Up co-founder Tron Carter. It had been a couple years since he and I had done a podcast, so it ran a little longer than I expected, so I'm going to split this into two parts. But first, I want to say thank you to everyone that downloads, listens, subscribes to the podcast, as well as those that have sent in an awesome array of questions these last few weeks. That's very much appreciated, and it makes it a lot easier for us to keep an ear to the street as to the kind of topics you guys want to hear us discuss. So thank you to everyone that has done that. And one other way you can really help us out would be to go on iTunes, take a couple seconds, and leave us a rating or a comment and a review on iTunes. It helps us for feedback purposes, as well as it helps us in iTunes. So that would be very much appreciated. It does not take much time, and I know for some of our regular listeners, that would be really appreciated from our end. And a second thing is Neil and Tron have worked very hard in getting our Pro Shop up to date with the most fresh items we have seen in our Pro Shop yet. There's new white hats. There's blue hats. The black performance tees are back in stock. The No Laying Up t-shirts, the gray ones, are back in stock. So please swing by the Pro Shop. Check it out. I promise you guys will like what's in there. As well as if you have any other suggestions as to items you'd like to see us add, we are more than happy to do that. So without further ado, here's part one of my podcast with Tron. Thanks again for tuning in. Gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. I'm Chris Solomon, and for the first time in probably almost 2 years, I'm doing a podcast with a fellow No Laying Up founder. Since moving across the Atlantic Ocean, it is very difficult to line up schedules with people that are 6-7 hours behind in time zone, but fear not, we have Mr. Tron Carter on the line calling in from Boston. What is Boston Marathon week been like for you, Tron?
Oh, it's been good. It's been our first one since we moved up here. So, I'd always heard about the hype and, you know, knew it was a busy week, but man, place has just been nuts. But all these runners are just, there's a lot of sick individuals that run and 20, like I couldn't, you know, I'm not a runner. I can probably bike 100 miles, but I can't run more than like 5 or my knee will explode. But yeah, all these people are just, it's been tough to get a reservation at a restaurant. It's been tough to, we live like 2 blocks from the finish line, so it's been tough to, you know, go out and get lunch or anything. It's just, I'm ready for everybody to get the hell out of here.
what year were they thinking about applying for the Olympics in Boston? Like 2024 or something like that?
Yeah, it was like 2022 or 2024. It would be an absolute debacle. this place is busy enough as it is.
Bill Simmons was like, nobody wants this. No one in Boston wants this. This would be a complete logistical nightmare.
Yeah, and really, I mean, we've only been here since November, but for the most part, we're just starting now to see the tourists come in. Like, we live right in the city, and I'm just like, holy shit, this is like it's like the cicadas, when the cicadas come like every 10 or 12 years. Like, the cicadas come at a certain time of the year, and it's just, like, got Japanese tourists walking down the street taking pictures, you know, trying to take pictures of me and my dogs. It's weird.
Posing for selfies with you. But you were just down in Augusta for the Masters a couple, last week, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I've been recovering since. Yeah, it's been, I guess, almost 2 weeks, or really 2 weeks yesterday since we went to the, Neil and I went to the Monday practice round.
And what was your, I know you shared a couple thoughts on some guys you saw there, but, and you've been to the Masters a bunch of times, but was there anything really different about this time going for you?
No, I mean, we keep lucking out as far as the weather goes. Guys from Tour Junkies were nice enough to have us down. Weather was like, it was a little bit on the chilly side. It was maybe 60, sunny. I didn't put any sunscreen on like a moron. I'm just ashy as hell now. But it was, you know, the course, I mean, obviously it's like the more things change in the golf world, the more things stay the same there. We were fortunate. We got to see a little bit of, DeChambeau, Justin Thomas went out with Koepka. So follow them a little bit on the back nine. Koepka big timed Oppie Bonrat so hard.
Oh no!
On the 10th tee, it was Neil and I were like, "Man, we may be all the way out on this guy because he just the big unit was there, and the big unit played by himself ahead of these guys." And I got to shoot a tee, but he had the best horse sauce moment. He was hitting like a 3-wood off the 10th tee, and this is the Monday practice round, and he just sprays it right, and he like drops the club and does a, you know, the right point. And it was like, it's a practice round, bro. Like, I don't even know why you need a point.
So. Marshall's got to find that ball. He's probably playing, keeping a worse ball score like Big Cat would be out there.
So, but yeah, actually the biggest takeaway I had was, I guess the last practice round I went to was Tuesday. But you know, we went Monday and a lot of guys fly in from Houston, you know, that played the week before, or, you know, a lot of the guys that didn't play the week before really, you know, fly in earlier and then they're there for a few days prior to really the first ostensible practice round. But I'm blown away at how many guys don't go off early and then hang out all day and then play late. Like really after 4 p.m., like, nobody was playing the back nine. It was like guys just played nine holes where I would think I would go in, like, play nine holes early in the morning, go get, you know, rubbed down, go have lunch, go work with my physio, you know, and then come back out at, like, 4 o'clock and play the back nine from, like, 4 to 6 or 4 to 6:30, especially if it was one of my first times.
Especially if you were planning on being one of the guys in the final pairings come
exactly.
The weekend, because
yeah.
That's,
yeah,
I imagine,
same,
yeah, that course plays
lighting,
different. Yeah,
yeah, same wind and stuff. So that was a little bit, I don't know, I don't know why more guys don't do that, especially on Monday, and then you just chill out Tuesday and Wednesday, and then ready to roll. I mean, the range was packed at that time. It was just nobody out of the course.
I think that was like that when we went, like in 2012, if I remember right, too. It was smoking hot during the day. Everyone was out during the day, and then by the time like 6 o'clock rolled around, we were like, all right, I guess we should go. There's no one really else left out here. But
So you
took in the practice round, and then I assume you got to see a lot of the coverage. I know I've been very. We've talked a lot about Spieth, a lot of things that happened. You know, I did two podcasts last week, but. I feel like you're a bit on the other side of the aisle on Spieth, I guess, than I am. It's not hard to be opposite of me on Spieth, I don't think. But I want to get your overall thoughts on everything that happened and what we saw from him last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's tough to be out on the guy. You know, I've been hugely supportive of him since
you have.
Really, he was at really in high school.
Starting to sound creepy, but yeah, you were.
My buddy Andy, like, you know, went to Jesuit High School in Dallas, and he's been talking this kid up since he was like 14. But looking at it, I just, you know, I followed him quite a few times, you know, whether it be like the Heritage or the Tour Championship in person, and it's just, I just feel like he's playing slower and slower, and it's driving me nuts. I mean, you know, and I don't know whether that's just indecision from being tired and overthinking things, but I feel like I feel like he's overanalyzing things. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, I don't think I ever noticed it until this past weekend, though. And well, I guess probably not until Friday. I thought it had something to do with him being a little bit overall comfortable with his ball striking. He scraped it around a little bit. Stats show that he was actually really good. He had a lot of really great shots, but he also just hit a lot of shots that really cost him. He was able to bail himself out with the putter a lot, but that's what I thought led to it. He just couldn't get decisive with that much wind and that much, you know, potential punishment, like on shots like 11, 12, 15, etc. Couldn't get comfortable, and he was backing off a ton of shots. I feel like that just kind of stockpiled on him, but for me, it's just not that pressing of an issue for a guy to be slow, like on a major championship weekend. I'm not in a huge hurry for it to be over, unless it's like, unless it's really affecting the outcome of the tournament. I didn't understand why a lot of people were getting really frustrated.
I guess my problem with it was, everybody was like, well, they're not out of position. I was like, well, they got Bernhard Langer, Jason Day, and Matsuyama up ahead of them, so that's not exactly the trifecta of
it was players. people were like making up how far behind they were, though. That's what was frustrating me. It's like they finished two holes back, and then I rewound it and was like, no, they were actually waiting in the 18 fairway to approach the green on Saturday. So
yeah. I guess I just, for me, some of it comes down to consistency. Like, yeah, if they're gonna penalize the Chinese kid,
oh god,
from a few years ago, then, you know, you gotta be consistent with that. And I'm, you know, it's not just This really isn't an anti-speed thing. It's just be consistent with everybody. You know, I used to be very critical of Kevin Na. I think he's done an excellent job of addressing the issue and speeding it up, you know. But the other thing is, I don't think CBS did any favors to Spieth. I mean, they would cut to him as soon, you know, before he would even pull his club.
Yeah.
You know, and then somehow not show or not have the audio of the conversations between him and Greller.
It's the worst possible combination.
Yeah, it was like, holy shit, what, like, you know, just clueless production.
Guys talking over it. I mean, yeah, that was their story for the weekend, was Spieth. It was spoon-fed to him, and I mean, yeah, it was a frustrating broadcast as it
always. Like, I get so frustrated, too, when, like, there's a kid like Matthew Fitzpatrick, right? Yeah. So we're always complaining about, like, Or the last few years, everybody's been complaining up until Spieth and Day and all these guys have come out. Like, you know, when are these young guys going to take charge, and when are they really going to, you know, come out and do stuff? Well, it's like, you got guys, it's like, they're always complaining about not having enough stars. But the problem is, like, one of the reasons there's not enough stars is because they don't show anybody else. It's like Koepka at the Phoenix Open a couple of years ago, or like, you know, Matthew Fitzpatrick at the Masters. I mean, they showed him a handful of times. This kid, you know, this kid's got one of the best swings I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And obviously has the stones to back it up, you know? But, I mean, why aren't they putting him out there front and center? You know, I don't get that.
That's what, it's just cyclical, right? They've put the same guys on TV for so many years that those guys rate well, they're popular guys, but they've no eye to the future as to who's going to be buttering their bread for future years, right? I mean, there's no excuse not to show a Daniel Berger shot come Sunday afternoon. You have time in that broadcast to show a couple shots from the guys that are top 15, top 10. Unless you were, I mean, he was on the broadcast a little bit on Saturday, but unless you knew that, you would not have known Daniel Berger finished top 10 at the Masters this year. It's pathetic. Yeah. And even
well, especially when Golf Digest is putting out photo galleries of his Instagram account because his girlfriend's hot.
She is. Yeah. That's
DB straight vibing.
DB straight vibing. At what point is he going to have to change that handle?
I don't think he does, man. I think that's him.
I can't get a read on that guy at all. I don't really know anything about him. He seems like not interesting, but I'm guessing there's more to him than what we've seen. But again, we never see him on TV, so I don't really know a whole lot about him.
I think he's like the main ambassador for Jupe Life.
For Jupe Life.
Hashtag Jupe Life.
All right, well, there's a guy you noted on Twitter that you saw in person swing the club, and I think you've formed an opinion on him. already from an off the golf course perspective that I think a lot of people agree with. And he's all anybody's talking about this week, and it's Bryson DeChambeau. So first I want, first of all, how do you say it? Because I was reading some tweets today that says like DeChambeau or something like that is how he says it.
I think it's Bryson DeChambeau. is how I've always pronounced it.
I put that on a T for you. I did not. That was unplanned, for the record. Anybody listen to this? But
really?
I did not mean to do that to you. So, all right. First, let's exclude everything else and just I want to hear your in-person reports on his him hitting a golf ball.
Well, first of all, I had a problem with him playing up the whole I'm an amateur thing when, you know, I think he signed with Puma Cobra like 6 weeks ago and just, you know, just basically delayed the payment until the Monday after the Masters, or maybe even that night. But that was kind of the worst kept secret out there. But obviously the guy can play. That's not, you know, that's beyond reproach. But really, I got the sense from him, you know, watching him, I was astounded at how far he hits the ball, how efficient his golf swing is. You know, he really did see him, you know, the shot he hit on 18, we saw him hit his tee shot on 18 too, and he just murdered the ball. So I was surprised to see what he did, you know, there leading in. So my problem with him, I like his swing. I don't have a problem with any of the one length clubs or anything like that. I think all that's cool. Everybody's like, oh, you just don't like him because he's different. No, I tend to like guys that are different. My problem with him is he just seems like, I don't know, kind of a J.J. Watt humble brag type, you know, kind of a fluffer.
Is it a humble brag when you're just like pretty much bragging all the time?
No, I guess that's the thing. It's not even a humble brag. It's just a, you know, it's just being who you are and being an arrogant douchebag, I guess. But sorry, you can cut that out. But
I'm not going to. That stays in.
But, you know, it's just, and I guess the theme now is that everybody feels like he's just playing everybody for a fool now. You know, that seems to be the consensus on Twitter this week, where, you know, everybody thinks, oh, you know, he's just stringing the media along. He's just having fun with it all. And I'm like, no, like, he's been like this pretty much the whole time. Like, yeah. You know, even before he won the U.S. Amateur, he was just kind of, you know, kind of out there and just talking about stuff where, you know, he was talking about like terminal velocity or something the other day in the press conference. And it was like, you know, that's not even applicable here. That's like a falling object, man.
So you're saying the physics stuff is fake?
It's not fake. It's just so played up. Like, I feel like he's trying to play into a certain persona now, but at the start, you know, which I guess is what everybody else is trying to say, but at the start, he had this persona to begin with. You know what I mean? It's not like he's been trying to manufacture this personality or anything like that. But, you know, it's not making any better that, like, Jim Nance just pimps the guy incessantly. I'm trying to think what else. It's just all a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a couple golf writers about it, and they're like, yeah, you know, he's a good kid. He just needs to take it down a couple notches, which is the sense that, you know, I think everybody could probably agree with that.
But, yeah.
You know, because he's here to stay. He's not going anywhere. You know, I just want to feel like the guy's genuine.
Yeah.
I think he is, though.
I mean, I think I'm not the first person to come up with the take that, you know, it's quirkiness for the sake of quirkiness, but it. I don't think he's overplaying it. I think he knows how different it is, and he's selling himself on that and kind of going overboard with it. But, I mean, he's 22 years old. We're kind of spoiled with Spieth and how he handles the media. And, like, he's a kid. I mean, and I do think this is truly how it is, but I think he knows that people are going to eat this up. But I think he also knows people are going to not like him because of it, so...
I just feel like some of it's over the top. Like when he signs his name backwards using his left hand.
Yeah.
Or you know, I feel like everybody's like, oh, Bryson, you're so wacky. Tell us about how wacky.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a lot of Phil in him, though. Like, Phil always, to me, always seems like he can't just be ahead of the curve with some kind of statistical advantage. He has to let everyone know that he's ahead of the curve. Or, you know, teams, studies show that college teams, when they wear black, they get more penalties and they're more aggressive. It's like, all right, we get it, Phil. You've thought it through.
Somebody said that the other day. Was it Porter or somebody who tweeted? He was like, yeah, he's like Phil, but without the benefit of having an agent or representative who's telling him to shut up, basically.
Yeah. It's like 10 times the fig jam of film, but I don't know if you ever experienced this, but like do you ever bet on guys that you don't like?
I've done it to basically
hedge your happiness
so that the result is palatable.
Yeah,
way.
Exactly.
I've done it with Bubba before.
Yeah, same. I've won with Bubba before, and it kind of, it's so, to me, like, it kind of softens my opinion of somebody. Like, when you win with somebody, the way I look at that person going forward is very different. Like, I bet on Keimer to win the Players a few years ago at 80-1, and like I was rooting for him at the U.S. Open just because of that. Like, just I was sold based on that. I bet on DeChambeau this past week at RBC. He wasn't that close to winning. I mean, he finished T4th, but I did not think he was going to win. But just like that feeling of rooting for him and having like his own shot tracker tab in my browser was kind of like, okay, I'm really enjoying this way more.
You think of him on more of an objective basis, for sure.
Yeah, well, I was like really surprised how much I was enjoying that. Like just following the shot tracker, like, and seeing the few clips that I saw, and I was like, I could actually see I actually preached before he came out. I was like, all right. His style is very different. Let's not overreact either way if he plays well or doesn't play well. Let's give him some time. I'm completely getting rid of that. After seeing two starts, I'm like in on him. From a golf perspective, I'm totally sold.
I mean, I don't think there's anything not to like from a golf perspective. Right. But like going back to what was his presser? It was like Monday or Tuesday at the Heritage. When he was talking about like being an artist, and I was like, dude, just can it. Like, just play golf, you know? Quit trying to show us how smart you are. I didn't get that.
Yeah, no, I think he'll eventually start fading from that. I hate the Hogan hat. That's one thing I was like,
oh, it's brutal.
I could be that's one thing that just makes it hard to look past, but he's nowhere near like a Bubba for me. You know, he's kind of like very similar to a Patrick Reed in that I think it's off-course antics and cockiness is kind of comical, and he's really good at golf, and he's a young American. I think that they're very similar in those regards. I think it's kind of funny. The whole thing is funny to me and entertaining.
What blew me away was when he was waiting for Danny Willett behind the 18th green in Augusta. Did you catch that?
I was in the corner of the room in the fetal position, so no, I missed that.
So he was waiting for Willett behind the 18th green, and Willett was just like, dude, what the hell are you doing?
They go way back.
It was bizarre, and I was just like, man, like this is, you know, it's kind of like Bubba hanging around for, you know, and like trying to be a nice guy. Sometimes when like some of these other guy wins and they're like, oh, like Bubba's congratulating me, like what the hell's going on? But like that just, and then the whole interaction between him and Spieth, and then Spieth threw a little bit of shade at him,
yeah,
in one of his pressers too. So I feel like these other guys are picking up on that same stuff and really they resent him a little bit, and not because he's got so much game, but just because he's, you know, he's just so outwardly flamboyant and arrogant with his,
yeah,
you know,
his whole shtick. Yeah, and it's not I wouldn't even call it shtick, but I've mentioned this is at least the second podcast I've mentioned what Eduardo Molinari had to say on, I found the tweet back in February he played with them, and honestly this is like one of the most remarkable, and I'm probably overrating this tweet, but it's one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen a PGA Tour player tweet. He said, "At least I was lucky to watch in person for 36 holes one of the best players I've ever seen, Bryson DeChambeau. Hashtag what a player, hashtag game changer." And I was like, when I read that, I was like, oh my God, like, wow. For another pro to say that about, you know, another pro, you don't really see that often. And the fact that he called him a game changer was just like, wow, there's really actually something really special and unique about this guy that's going to be pretty interesting to watch.
You got to take it with a grain of salt, though.
Are they the same, like, management company or something?
That's one of the Flying Molinari brothers. Like, they're like the international cell of LPCP on tour.
LCPC. I said this to Porter, too, because I think we talked about this exact tweet, but I still don't know which one of the two of them is better. I think you know, and I don't want you to tell me, because I kind of like the mystery of not knowing which one of the Molinaris is the better Molinari.
They're like the Walenda brothers, you know. It's just like they need to take it all away, take it back to the Euro Tour, get out of here.
Well, I don't want to transition too quickly into questions we got, but now that we're on DeChambeau, I'm going to ask you some of the questions that we got from Twitter, if that's cool. But Wally Brennan wants to know: 5 years from now, who has more wins? Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau.
Until Thomas proves to me that he can, proves all of us, not me. I don't mean to say that in a like I'm the one judging him, but until he proves that he can close, I would say DeChambeau. Because DeChambeau, I remember watching him at the USAM last year, and I mean, the guy was literally, he was like unbeatable. It was like, holy shit, nobody's gonna touch this guy.
Do you think it's gonna like cause a true like change in the way people play the game of golf?
I mean, I don't know. There's probably kids sitting in the bathtub, you know, soaking their Pro V1s in Epsom salt. After, you know, I think he said that couple, you know, there's just like these little, almost like novelty things that he's, you know, kind of come out and been quoted as saying, but I think there's some legitimate stuff there. Like, I think the whole, like, I've never thought about his whole concept of wedges, where you take it back to 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and having a list of exactly how far you hit it.
Yeah.
At each of those spots. Like, that's actually really useful, you know, really, I don't know, kind of enlightened stuff. So, I mean, I think there's some stuff that he does that's definitely applicable to a wide variety of people. It could help people with their games. But, I don't know if a lot of people, you're talking to kind of a field player, too. So, I'm not as good at, you know, identifying with some of the stuff that he's you know, the whole proprioception thing and all that stuff. You know, I'm not as good as identifying with some of that more scientific stuff.
Well, if there's anything that looks unnatural, and it's when he's trying to like chip with a 6-iron length club, like that part. And I think he even said something about it after the round, after playing with Spieth, like, that's where I need to get with my wedges. So I think if there's going to be a weakness in his game, that's probably going to be it. But I'm sure he'll figure out some scientific way to resolve that. But I think I'd like to think that this could be like a change in the game in some way, but you have to commit to so many different things to do this that I don't see like people, you know, this being a normal thing. Like his setup to the ball with those clubs so upright and the one plane swing, like, you have to perfect that. There's not like the trial and error for that has to take a long, long time. And there's no like amateur that's going to go say, hey, put my clubs 13 degrees upright right now, I'm going to go remake my swing. So people are saying like this could completely revolutionize the way we play the game. Who knows? Maybe in 100 years, every single person has the exact same swing and it looks exactly like that. But he's the first person to really, really, you know, change the way a golf club is swung. Maybe then, like, Bubba's probably the opposite end of that spectrum, but I can't think of anyone else that really swings the club that differently on tour. Can you?
Yeah, I mean, Furyk.
Yeah, that's the only one.
But at the end of the day, he's still like from kind of in the impact zone. He's still in the same spot everybody else is. You know what I mean?
Bryson is, you're saying?
Almost. Furyk.
Okay.
You know, Furyk. He's doing all this crazy shit all around, but that's masking the fact that he's got a really fundamentally sound swing in the impact zone. I think with DeChambeau, I mean, I got to give the guy a lot of credit, too, to commit to, you know, to be a decent player and then commit to that sort of swing and that sort of off-the-wall stuff is, I mean, that's definitely admirable. So, you know, I don't want to sit here and shit on the kid. I just think he needs to, you know, he needs to tone it down a couple notches.
Yep, that's fine. What do you think about his chances to be on the Ryder Cup team this fall?
Shit, after what I saw in the USAM, you know, I'd take him over. I'd sure as hell take him over Kuchar.
You would?
There's about four or five guys I'd probably take him over out there. Just because, you know, he's probably going to piss the Euros off too, which is always a good thing.
We got a great comment here. It's from at No One Denies This. It's very fitting handle for this comment. Bryson Patrick Reed is going to be the greatest Ryder Cup pairing ever. I have no question. I'm not upset with that take, Zach. That's phenomenal. But
who do you put Spieth with?
I would say Thomas, but I don't think, as we're sitting here currently, I don't think he's sitting in a great position to be on the Ryder Cup team. I don't know where he is on the points list. I know he's tight with DL3, but I think he'd be the first to tell you his game recently has not been, it's not been up to par to what we would expect from a Ryder Cup player. I'm not saying that he's not going to turn it on, but if we're sitting here right now, I wouldn't, you know, as big of a Thomas fan as I am, I wouldn't say that he's probably near the top of the list to be a captain's pick. Would you?
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think Adam Sarson wrote a good piece today.
It's so early in the game.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And so much can change. I mean, imagine like in 2014 at this time talking about, you know, people wanting Horschel to be on it, and then it was unanimous right before the event started that everyone wanted Horschel on the team. Like, everything can absolutely change in the matter of a couple months. So, but yeah, that's. I guess you probably kind of already answered my next question in that. We've had one American win in the last 8 weeks or something like that. I saw that stat on Twitter. I don't know. I don't remember where I read that. Apologies. But is that a concerning sign for the Ryder Cup team at this point?
I think some of that's just a matter of there's just more international guys playing than ever before on tour. You know, a lot of these Euros, I think I saw Willett either today or yesterday, you know, basically announced that he's going to play U.S. Tour full-time. I mean, they're... You know, just the, I'm sure you can attest to this living over in Europe. It seems like the Euro Tour, you know, they haven't played it, like, they played in Europe for the first time, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
The season? You know, I mean, I realize the weather sucks, you know, but at the same time, it's just like, the money's better over here, you know, it's, the travel's better, you know, I feel like a lot more guys are playing a lot more over here. I mean, you even look at a guy like Oppie Bonrat, you know, he's playing over here a lot now. You know, it's just a matter of you get inside that top 60. It's like that guy, was it Byung Kyung An? He either won or almost won at Wentworth last year, but he played in the Masters. I mean, he's been playing a lot over here. You know, so it's like even the guys that don't have membership.
He's American, though. Isn't he been on?
I think he's... He's either American, he's like American of Korean descent, but he's been playing the Euro Tour.
Yeah, he has played the Korean Tour.
Years.
But yeah, I mean, the Euro Tour has become so, it's so not well named, first of all. It's such a joke how much travel those guys have to do. And
yeah.
I get a lot of criticism when I say like somebody like Brendan Grace needs to come over and play the PGA Tour on a regular circuit if he wants to be considered. That's true. It's accurate. It's totally accurate. I mean, but he obviously can back his game up. I mean, same goes for Willett. He's proven it beyond any means that needs to be proven. But I want to see what this guy's got on a week-to-week basis. I do not mean in the slightest regard that either of their wins the past 2 weeks have been flukes. That's not what I'm trying to say. It's like I want to see what this guy's got rather than, you know, his basically intro to the world being, you know, this huge win where we don't know a whole lot about him. So
you want to see if he's Charles Schwartzel or,
yeah,
you know, somebody that's, I'm trying to think of a Euro that's really
Trevor, you know, Immelman.
Yeah, that's been more, you know, which actually funny story on the Masters, and I can't remember who he was talking to, but he was like, yeah, I just ran into Oosthuizen's agent. He was like, God, if I could just get that guy to give a shit, just to try at all. He's like, he could be the best player in the world and it wouldn't even be close, but he just doesn't care at all.
What would you call the Jason Day versus Oosthuizen match in the match play? Like the guy that just doesn't care and the guy that cares probably way too much.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. That was part one. That's it for now. I hope to have part two of the podcast with Tron Carter up on Thursday. Thanks again for tuning in.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!